Special Committee on Fisheries to order at 8:42. Let the records reflect, we have Representative Wilson, Representative Elkins, Co-Chair Ledoux, Co-Chair Thomas here. And we'll bring up HB 37 first and then HB 218. So this time, we have a CS in front of us. We need to adopt the CS. Is there a motion to adopt?
I'll move to adopt the CS.
No objections. CS is in front of us. Representative Garrard, please explain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing the bill again. The CS makes these roughly four changes. On page one at line one, the title now stresses that this bill only applies to voluntary land trade and trades and purchases. The bill is not intended to take away anybody's land who doesn't want to sell it. That was the intention of the original bill, but we put in the word voluntary in the title. Did that again on page one, line seven, to make the same point in the findings. That was actually in the bill in a later finding. We just moved the finding up to the top to emphasize it. Mr. Chair had a concern. There was some language in the earlier bill that said the department didn't have to pay fair market value to get land. The intention there was to let the department pay more than fair market value, but that seemed a little vague, so we just took that portion out. Mr. Chair made a good point on that one, so that part's been deleted. We added on page 4, line 9, again, that this bill isn't adding any power of the state to use eminent domain to take people's land away. This bill just applies to voluntary exchanges. Representative Wilson had a good concern, which was, what if a landowner had land on a stream that they just didn't want to be hassled about, and they didn't want the state offering to buy the land because they're just never going to sell it, and they don't want the land talked about. And so if the Department of Fish and Game lists any potential land that they want public access on, and the landowner says, just don't bother me about it, they have to remove that piece of land from the list. That's page 4, line 22. And that's it. Those are the changes. And certainly I could answer any questions.
Questions?
I don't have any questions, Mr. Chairman, but I'd make a comment. We just went through this committee and a couple other committees and passed a fish hatchery bill to raise fish up in the northern part of the state for freshwater fish and the sport fish, and I think these two bills tie together real nicely. It doesn't make much sense to produce more fish and not take some effort to try to allow people access to the waters where the fish are going to be planted, and I would sure hope we move this bill.
Everyone, oh good. Representative Ledoux.
Yes, I notice on page 5, the word, on line 2, the word shall looks like it was stricken out, and somebody hand wrote in the word must. Was that something?
I just noticed that that's handwritten in there, and I don't know why it is, tell you the truth. It seems like shall and must mean the same thing, so I have no idea why somebody did that.
I don't.
Representative Wilson?
I don't think that they do mean quite the same thing. There's a difference, and we're pretty careful in our statutes not to use must. We usually use shall or may, you know, or may, and so must isn't what we usually use at all. I actually noticed over here there was a place that said must, and I thought, well, on page 4, line 9, where it says the right of eminent domain may not be exercised, and that might be okay there, but shall not is stronger. Yeah. So I don't like the word must. You know,
deleted.
I would just say leave it the way it is. Shall, either it will or it won't, and shall is a stronger word in our statute.
Okay, we have one person online. Any other questions of the sponsor? If not, we have one person online, Ricky Geese, Kenai.
Yes, this is Ricky Geese, Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. I would agree that these couple bills that you're speaking about deserve equal weight. If you're going to put more fish in places, we need to have access to those places. And as a sport fishing association, we strongly support passage of the bill.
Any questions? None. Is there anybody else in line? That's it. Anybody in the audience want to testify? Okay. Oh, you do? Okay. Come up here. You have to come up chair here and state your name and affiliation.
Thank you all for having me come here. I'm Douglas Reynolds, and I'm from Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage. And I would like to encourage this bill to continue through this committee hearing. I feel that it's very important to have additional access to the stream, especially in the Kenai area, which are the suggested areas at the end of the bill. I'm a fisherman. I love to fish. It's my livelihood. I was raised as a fly fisherman, and the accessibility on the Kenai and surrounding streams is decent. However, in Alaska, you have a unique thing called combat fishing, and for me, it deters and detracts from fishing. It kind of reduces the aesthetic pleasure, which is an important part of fishing, and so there's a decline in fishermen in the state, as well around sport fishermen in the state and around the United States, and I feel that by opening up these areas would give a better experience for fishing and a more enjoyable experience, and which is good for the state. So I encourage you guys to move the bill forward and let us have some more accessible streams around the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions?
No, thank you.
Let the records reflect that Representative Capsa has joined us and Representative Salmon. So at this time, we'll close public testimony and bring it back to committee. Wishes of the committee? Discussion? Motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would move CS for House Bill number 37, version 24-LS0284/L.
Aye.
Or is it aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition?
Okay.
Representative Salmon objects. Roll call.
We want to wait for Peggy?
No, it's okay.
Representative Salmon?
No.
Representative Pierce is absent. Representative Elkins?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
She's good.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Thomas?
Yes. 4-1. Bill is moved from committee with individual recommendations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay. At this time, we're bringing up House Bill 218. Do we do have a CS, Ian?
Yes, we do.
I don't have it, Mike.
You do.
Still mine. At this time, we need to adopt CS for HB 218.
Mr. Chairman, I would have moved that we adopt CS for House Bill 218, version Y. Point of discussion.
No objection. CS 218, version Y is in front of us. Grab my staff.
For the record, my name is Ian Fisk, staff to Representative Thomas, and I'll just explain the changes to the original bill. First of all, in Section 1, the findings are changed, and we now read, the Alaska State Legislature finds that Alaska private nonprofit salmon hatcheries should maximize the harvest of returning hatchery-produced salmon by commercial salmon fishing permit holders. The legislature also finds that private nonprofit hatcheries should minimize, to the greatest extent feasible, the direct sale of salmon harvested in special harvest areas. On page 3, this is probably the biggest change. Section E is changed, and that's because the Attorney General's office advised us that the language in the original bill, in which the revenue from the assessment would be held in trust, would not work. Essentially, if it's an assessment, it's considered revenue of the state, and it must be appropriated by you folks in the legislature. So it's reworded to basically model the way that other fishing industry assessments have been structured before, such as the former 1% salmon marketing tax, the 3% salmon enhancement tax. And that's going to make it's going to be one more hurdle to jump for a hatchery operator, because there's going to be a delay in the distribution of the funds, because they're going to have to come through the legislature and, you know, go through. They won't receive the funds until the following year. And that's something that can certainly be worked out on a hatchery-by-hatchery basis. They'll have to have some kind of a reserve fund, especially just at the beginning to get the program started. And from that point on, it would be like any other funding mechanism. A couple of the other changes are basically related to subsection E, and those are on page 2, lines 20 and 22. And at the top of page 3, line 3, so that's just conforming language. The Department of Revenue would no longer be able to set the dates of distribution to the funds, because they would have to go through the legislature. The final change is on page 3, line 22, and this is probably what will have fishermen running scared, I suppose, but it's a change to the penalty. Originally, it was just a Class A misdemeanor, and we have it as a Class A commercial fisheries misdemeanor, which is not a new misdemeanor at all. It's already in statute. It puts a little more teeth into it, to the enforcement side of it, because it says that instead of up to a $10,000 fine, it could now be a $15,000 fine, like other commercial fishing violations, as they relate to Department of Fish and Game regulations. So, and in addition to the slightly higher fine, it also would make any violation subject to forfeiture of the vessel, forfeiture of the gear. It'd be the same as if you were fishing in closed waters or something like that, which occasionally happens. So we're putting a little more teeth into the enforcement side of it with that. I just want to reiterate that, and by the end of the meeting we'll probably sound like broken records around here, but nothing changes the May language, the permissive nature of this bill, and that's the intent. That's not going to change. It does not change in this CS. No hatchery permit, no hatchery operator will have to institute any kind of cost recovery program that's different from the one they're doing now, unless they feel that it's a good option. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions? Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, if this permissive language, and I know that's a big fear of the hatcheries, but do you think then the hatcheries are going to do this? Or are they going to, how are we going to force them to do it? How is there going to be a change if we just say that they can do it? I mean, how is that going to take place I just don't know. I guess I don't quite understand how it's going to work if they're going to say, we're not going to change. And when now we say they can, but they don't have to. And now I want the permissive language to stay, but I don't know how it's going to work if that, you know, I just don't quite understand.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to say shall. And because of the fact that so many hatcheries have different circumstances, they have different debts, they have different types of fish. In some places, they're producing more pinks than chums. So the market factors are different for them. And we don't want to be heavy-handed and just make a blanket statement here and force all hatcheries into doing something this way. It's a bill that's worded permissively to give them flexibility. As far as the likelihood of hatcheries doing it, at this point, it's hard to say. And we heard testimony in the first hearing from the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association that they had tried to do this in the past, but they didn't. The Board of Fisheries felt that they didn't have the authority to let a hatchery do
it. So some have follow-up.
But I mean, each hatchery is just going to have to do that at the time that, you know, and especially with regional aquaculture associations, they have boards that include representatives from the common property users, and they're just going to have to work it out. That's really up to them, and it's kind of a process we want to keep outside of the legislature.
Well, I do have one more
Representative
question.
Representative Wilson.
I'm sorry. I don't know the clause in there the change in there that's going to make it so that they aren't going to get their funding as quickly. Are the hatcheries in a position that they can handle that as long as they know it's going to be coming?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, it would depend on each hatchery's particular finances, which we haven't delved into. So again, that's just something that they would have to consider under this option. It boils down to a matter of having, you know, when you constitutionally, that's the way it has to be written.
Okay. Let the records show that Representative Harris has joined us. What was I going to say? I think the key thing, Representative Wilson, in the bill here is what Ian pointed out, that the fishermen started the hatcheries, the fish were, you know, for them to increase their profitability and produce more common property fish. Hopefully, I'm going to say hopefully that the board of directors have enough commercial fishermen on their board that they can utilize this. And I think it's a good tool as we go along in the fisheries because, you know, the price of fuel, you got to stay out there longer. The run to the grounds costs you more than it does when you actually fish.
Right.
So, anyway, any other questions for Ian?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Have you taken public testimony on this yet?
We're just starting. We just made the presentation of the bill, so we've got it coming.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Do you have anybody from Valdez on there?
We have Mike Wells.
All right, good. Thanks.
No questions? Okay, we'll go to start on the bottom here. Bruce Wallace and Ketchikan, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
I guess a little bit to Representative Wilson.
State your name and
I'm sorry. Bruce Wallace, Ketchikan, Alaska, Post Office Box 8572. This is just another step that makes it a little bit more difficult. I think so long as the bill conforms to the legal necessities, that's all that we can require, and as long as it stays permissive, it'll be up to the respective boards to act on it. It does make the benchmark a little bit higher with a one-year delay. I'm on the SARA board. At this time, I doubt seriously whether SARA would avail itself of this. However, the idea of having the tool available is, I think, the central element of this. And so long as it's consistent and the tool is available, if it's used, great. That means someplace down the road, there was a fit, and if it is not used, then it's still available, and so I support it in that sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none, thank you. Go to Sitka, Peter Squirrel, name and affiliation.
Good morning, committee members. I'm Peter Squiro. I'm general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture, headquartered here in Sitka. I just got a copy late yesterday of the CS for House Bill 218, and I'm glad to see that the findings are changed somewhat. What is stated there is more in tune with what we do at the present time, and I think it's consistent with, you know, with our thinking on how we should be operating in these fisheries. I wanted to say a little bit about about the general financing of these hatchery programs. I hope that you all, and I'm sure that all of you understand that financing these hatcheries outside of the public sector is no small job. It's a challenge that's been put before us here in Alaska, but has really never been done, that, to my knowledge, anywhere else, at least on the West Coast. Private operation of hatcheries is something that we've been able to do up here that I don't think anyone else has been successful in doing. That's why in most states you see funding of hatcheries and operations of hatcheries completely in the public sector, because they can, you know, it's all tax money that goes into these things. The concept was sound 20 years ago when this law was authorizing private nonprofit hatcheries was put together. Cost recovery, unfortunately, was it was the mechanism that was identified by the legislature back in those founding days as the mechanism most likely to succeed in allowing for private payment of hatchery operating costs. For a number of years, we have not been fully satisfied with the way cost recovery is going. Despite the fact that we have been in this association fairly successful in getting 70%+ of our returns every year to the common property fisheries, we've always felt that there's some room for improvement. And we continue to look for those areas where we can improve that program. But, you know, quite frankly, in all the looking that we've done over the past 15 years or so, we've not found a replacement for it that does not result in a net loss in value to the commercial fishery resource. And that's the bottom line, as far as I'm concerned. Anseron's cost recovery is really the contribution to this cost recovery program contributions are very diverse. As some of you who may have written the paper that I sent out describes that cost recovery program a little bit. We have several sources of income. We have several species and several locations that feed into our total cost recovery program, and I've not had the time yet to fully analyze what taking one of our major contributors to that cost recovery program and setting it off as a separate kind of a separate entity will do to the total cost recovery program. I've got to analyze that further. I want to thank Chairman Thomas for allaying my fears with respect to the permissiveness of this bill, and to all of you on the committee who obviously recognize our concern. We like it there, and the commitment that has been made by the chairman that if that were to change, he would consider pulling the bill means a great deal to me. And I want to thank the chairman for making that commitment. I wanted to just in closing go through the bill, the couple places that I'd I hope that you'll consider. First of all, on page 2 at line 10, where it says the board may adopt regulations as the board considers appropriate, I think that at that point there could be some clarification. Do you mean the Board of Fisheries or the Board of Directors of the corporation? That's a little it's a little nebulous the way it's worded. So I think with a small change, it could be it could be tightened up. On page 3, at line 5, I believe that where you get into the last half of line five, the representatives of affected commercial fishermen. I think that's redundant in that the NSRAW board of directors, who really is the hatchery permit holder, we have 15 commercial fishermen on the NSRAW board, five from each gear group. So I think that that representation is there without having that in there in five. At line nine, the sixth word, facility. I am wondering whether or not that should be changed to corporation, because we tend to look at, when it comes right down to it, each facility is not its own island. Basically, what we're talking about is the overall ability of the corporation, and the corporation is actually the entity that has the fiduciary responsibilities to fulfill with respect to finding financing entities. The second to the last item, I just wanted to hit very lightly, and that is at item E that Mr. Fisk referred to. I know that that's modeled after the language in the authorizes the salmon enhancement tax, and I hope that we can continue to have the same kind of relationship with the legislature that we've had for the last 20 some years with respect to appropriating the funds. Finally, on page four, the exemption to the 3% enhancement tax, including or in a common property fishery. I want to point out that in some years, the salmon enhancement tax, the 3% tax that's generated from the fish caught at Hidden Falls Hatchery, can be 1/4 to 1/3 of our entire enhancement tax in a given year. So in the models that we've worked with to determine whether or not this is a good thing for fishermen or in the net value of commercial fisheries, we did not take exempting this from the 3% tax into consideration. I hope that you would reconsider that exemption part there, because that is real income that we have coming into us. Now, the variation, like last year, as an example, last year our 3% enhancement income was $700,000, of which something on the order approaching $200,000 came from 3% paid on fish at Hidden Falls in the common property fishery. So I point these things out in an attempt to try to make the bill a better bill. Basically, I wanted to say, though, that we are still opposed to House Bill 218. I don't think that this is really enforceable, and in the models that I've looked at, I don't know that this really produces the results desired by the commercial fishermen. I agree that it is another tool in the belt, but I still have some uncertainty in my mind about whether or not it produces the intended results. I'd like to thank you all for seriously looking at our opinions, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you, Pete. Any questions, Mr. Squirrel? None. Thank you, Pete. Steve sitting there with you? Steve Reifenstuhl?
Yes, I am here. This is Steve Reifenstuhl from Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture. Appreciate you allowing me to testify this morning. I will reiterate a couple points, but try to stay on new ground for you. I think that the findings, the change there is really a 180-degree turnaround from the way it was. It was, I think, originally pointing at us in a negative way, and now you've sort of defined us in the sense of maximizing the number of fish we put to the common property. As most of the committee members know, 80% of our fish do go to the common property, and minimizing the number of cost recovery fish we take, which, again, that is what we do. So I guess I appreciate you changing the findings in that positive light. I have done an economic analysis of what this would mean if this were implemented at Hidden Falls, and I have shared that with Representative Thomas's aide, fisheries aide, Ian Fisk. And in our analysis, there's a negative benefit or a net negative benefit to the fishermen with this tax imposed at Hidden Falls. Only under one or two scenarios with zero administrative fee, no increase in enforcement monies, and at no, at a price of approximately 27 cents, is there any benefit to common property fisheries. All other cases, it is a net benefit, negative benefit, and they would actually have less money in their pockets at the end of the season than they do now. Also, on Wednesday, I passed out the white paper or letter of response to Bill 218 to all the representatives, so you should have a copy of that before you. And if you didn't get that from the people I handed to in the office, we can make that available later. I guess the last thing I would say is that managing a fishery at one of the hatchery programs is a very difficult and complex job. And to do that, we have to consider not only contribution to the common property fisheries, but also our cost recovery program, and more particularly, our broodstock. And if this proposal were implemented at Hidden Falls, we would still potentially have to close down a midweek fishery because of broodstock concerns. At places like Neats Bay or Gastineau Channel, Hidden Falls, MedVG program, we're looking at broodstock requirements of over 100,000 fish just for broodstock. And so that can be, you know, sometimes 5%, 10% of the return. And it takes a great deal of effort to have that entire return represented in its timing. We can't just wait till the end of the return to take broodstock, because that would skew the timing on future returns. So we have to manage the fishery from the very beginning to the end to assure representation of that broodstock. Let's see, I would say one last thing about our economic analysis that I shared, and it has to do with the exemption. I didn't realize that the 3% tax wouldn't be applied to the fish harvested in any one of these special harvest areas. Therefore, for instance, if we had to have a 30%, just by example, tax on the Hidden Falls fishery, if the 3% exemption goes through, then what that really means is making the tax at Hidden Falls 33% to generate the necessary revenue we would need for operations. I see that having the tax collected like the 3% is, and then not appropriated to the associations until the following year, as is a major hurdle and problem with this and in its implementation. Most organizations don't have the funds, or the reserve funds they do have are designated for certain purposes, not specifically for the purpose of forward funding an entire operation. So I see that as a major hurdle to even ever being able to use this tool. Those are my comments. I appreciate the time you've given me. Thank you very much, Representative Thomas and other committee members.
Thank you, Steve. Any questions? I have one, Steve, for you. And since you keep talking about the cost recovery and the amount of monies that we pay in for the enhancement tax, and I know that you have like one of the largest sport charter fleets in Southeast, and what percentage of the contributions to the hatchery come from the sport charter fleet to manage and operate your hatcheries?
Well, we don't get anything on a regular basis from the sport fisheries, either from sport fish division or from organized sport charter groups. We occasionally get some money from the charter charter organizations, particularly the ones that fish on our Deer Lake returns down in the southeast part of Baranoff Island. We have gotten about $3,000 from the local charter boat organization here in Sitka. But of course, the cost of these programs is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars in value to the sport fisheries. So $3,000 is really a drop in the bucket. We appreciated it when we received it, but you know the real answer to the question is we don't get hardly anything.
Okay, because I've paid that much in 1 year before. I was just wondering because you keep referring to the amount of money a contribution from the commercial guys, and okay, I just wanted to have it on the record that you get very little. If $3,000 over 20 years is nothing. And I just for the record had noticed that it's a $20 million industry to the sport charter operators in the Sitka area. So to get $3,000 back, I think, is and you take more cost recovery fish to manage that. So, okay, thank you, Steve.
You're welcome, and I'd love to have a chance to talk to you when you get to that bill for the sport licensing increase. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll take the speaker's lead and follow him. Okay. This time we'll go to Valdez, Mike Wells.
Good morning, Chairman Thomas and members of the committee. My name is Mike Wells. I'm a sales manager for Valdez Fisheries Development Association here in Valdez. VFDA, as you know, is opposed to House Bill 218, and with the CS before you, we're just as opposed to it as we were the last time it came before the committee. Among other issues, we have some serious concerns with this Section E on page 3. The suggestion that the assessed funds will go into the general fund and then the legislature may or may not appropriate these funds back to the hatchery operator is just not going to work in our opinion. There's just no guarantee that these funds would come back to the hatcheries after being subjected to the legislative process. The hatchery operators, including VFDA, we just simply can't wait to pay expenses pending these appropriations, and we're not sure what, if any, loans would be available or funding would be available in reserves to be able to carry us over. Another issue we'd like to see, there's no fiscal note attached to this. There's been no financial analysis of what the impact of HB 218 would have on the private hatcheries and as well as the state of Alaska Department of Revenue that holds the notes on most of these facilities. So therefore, VFDA would strongly oppose HBL 218, and I would thank you for your time. Representative Thomas and members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Any questions? Representative Harris.
Thank you. This is a constituent of mine, and the hatchery is in my district, so obviously I have some concern. The language in Section E on page 3 is more boilerplate than anything else, but has the legislature, is there any, Chairman, is there any language in statute that you're aware of that is permissive in this way that would allow for legislative discretion to the hatchery programs? Are you aware? I mean, we certainly have that that permissive language in many other areas of statutes all over the place, but I'm just wondering if does this develop a situation where a hatchery from year to year would not know whether or not that their cost recovery money that was generated through that hatchery would
be? It's my understanding that the salmon enhancement tax is handled the same way, and it goes through the same avenues, and we pay a 3% raw fish tax, our enhancement tax, and that's handled the same way. So if it's working now,
for ASME, you mean?
No, for the hatcheries.
Oh.
We pay a 3% enhancement tax to NSRA, and it's taken out of our checks each week, and then at the end of the year, I guess it's mailed to Department of Revenue and then sent back to them again. So,
I wonder, is there anybody here from the Department of Revenue that...
Yeah, we have them up next. Oh, no, that's law. Anybody from Revenue here to...
Revenue could not make it today.
Before we go too much further on this, I just want to get a question, or maybe I can question them. This goes to resources? Yeah, I'll question them in resources.
Okay, Steve Daugherty, are you online?
Yes, through the chair, this is Stephen Daugherty. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law in Anchorage. First, I would like to say that we have been working with the sponsor of this bill, and we're very happy with the changes in the CS dealing with legal issues that we raised regarding the may appropriate language. We do feel that those changes were constitutionally required. We do still have a few concerns with Section D of the bill and the broad discretion that it gives to the Commissioner of Revenue to set an assessment at anywhere between 0% and 40% without definite guidelines and criteria for imposing a set level. We do recognize that there are criteria there and that the bill may be defensible. However, we do believe that it would be more defensible if more explicit criteria for establishment of the fee are set forth in the bill. We note that there are no other statutes that give such broad discretion to a department to set such a wide range of an assessment. Most of the other statutes that deal with this situation, such as the salmon enhancement tax, the dive fishery management assessment, and the seafood marketing assessment, lay out specific options that the department can choose between, and in some cases have a vote of a association to determine which one is going to be imposed. We would be more comfortable with language like that, but we do realize that with the uncertainty and the variance between the different hatcheries, that such a scheme might not be feasible because it might require 40 or more separate options. And we are continuing to work with the sponsor of the bill, and we hope that we can develop some more definite criteria for the assessment in future versions of the bill. But at this point, we are very happy with the changes in the CS and believe that they take care of the major legal problems that the bill had before. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions? None here, so thank you, Stephen. Anybody else online? Anybody in the audience want to testify? State your name and affiliation.
For the record, my name's Bruce White, and I work for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And I was asked to come here and provide some comment from the department on this bill. Basically, there's just some concerns that the department has with the legislation, in that the department does exercise oversight authority over the private nonprofit hatcheries through their annual management plans. However, the department has not been involved in the actual mechanics of the cost recovery operations of these hatcheries. And this legislation would have the department establish rules and conditions governing these common property cost recovery fisheries. And the department would prefer not to become involved as a referee on an issue that is basically between the fisherman and the hatchery operator. Second concern is this legislation has the Department of Fish and Game consulting with the Department of Revenue in establishing the rate of assessment to be levied on the fishermen. And we currently do not know what information or expertise the department is expected to provide or its role in this consultation. And again, historically, the department has not had a role in setting hatchery cost recovery policies or amounts, and would prefer that it continue not to have a role in that process. And lastly, I guess the department is concerned that the early and late portions of the returns to the hatchery cost recovery, when the volumes of fish are relatively low, may not be adequately harvested, especially if other more attractive opportunities are available to the commercial fishermen. So the department would want to ensure that the hatchery had a backup harvester or harvesters to clean up any fish from the beginning or end of the run that may not be harvested in the common property fishery. Finally, the department understands that this legislation has been generated because of some conflicts between hatchery cost recovery operations and opportunities for common property fisheries on hatchery stocks. The department is willing to work on solutions to these problems when they are brought to our attention. And in closing, the department appreciates that this legislation is voluntary and the hatchery operator has the option to utilize common property fisheries for cost recovery. We're also supportive of the efforts to benefit commercial fisheries and commercial fishermen and hatchery operators, which we believe this bill attempts to do. We offer these comments and hope to produce legislation that's beneficial to both fishermen and hatchery operators. And the department is not requesting the committee to hold this bill, and we can work with the sponsors and fishermen and hatchery operators to help move this bill through the process. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Leave a copy of testimony so we can work off that, if you will. Any questions? Hearing none, thank you. Anybody else wish to testify here?
Well, Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Thorstenson. I'm the president of UFA and also the executive director of Southeast Alaska Seniors. Both of which groups support this legislation. We think it's very important legislation, very progressive legislation, and we urge you to pass this through to the House Fisheries, House Resource Committee. I just wanted to address a couple things briefly, but also say that as very avid supporters of this legislation, which we think is a real positive step to help bring fishermen and hatcheries together. It's basically a simple, when you've been through that Fairbanks Sportfish bill, you think of this as a user fee. And this Fairbanks Sportfish bill, and it's become more than Fairbanks, I realize, the hatchery bill that's out there has an assessment that is on every sport fisherman, including myself who went sport fishing 3 weeks ago. It's not quite as a direct connection, perhaps, because I may not catch any of those fish that are produced by that hatchery. In this case, all we're asking for is the ability to discuss with the hatchery and the hatchery board a way to have a direct user fee so the people that actually catch the fish pay the fee. I think it's a real novel concept, and I think it's more than a concept. I think it's a pretty serious endeavor that we're trying to work on. And we would entertain any departments in the state, revenue, commerce, fish and game, or anybody who will be involved at all in any step of the way. We'd like to work with you, and I appreciate the gentleman from Fish and Game, particularly in the closing statements, how he said he'd like to work with the legislation in the future and pass it on. Just wanted to address a couple things that he said real briefly. Fish and Game's role will not change dramatically at all. The fish are going to be caught during the common property harvest, and it's not going to be caught in a special cost recovery fishery if this legislation were to be passed. The Fish and Game already manages that common property fishery. They have enforcement down in Hidden Falls every Sunday and other hatcheries and other locations in the state. This is the Fish and Game's purview. They're going to be managing the common property fishery, so I think that's sort of redundancy. The cost recovery fishery is going to be taken into the common property fishery. So whereas the Fish and Game fellow here said that the Fish and Game doesn't have expertise in managing cost recovery, this is not going to be cost recovery anymore if a hatchery decides to go down this course, because cost recovery will come out of the assessment in the fishery. I think that was maybe a misunderstood. The consultation that Fish and Game currently does to set the 3% assessment of Southeast, which I believe last year exceeded $1 million in the case of NSRA, that 3% assessment, which is levied against fishermen the Fish and Game has a role there, and we're not asking for a greater role than that. The Fish and Game has to guess or make an estimate of how many fish are coming back. The Fish and Game doesn't have to levy taxes, come up with different kind of revenue ideas. Fish and Game is just going to do their normal, simple role of estimating how much fish are coming back. So that rule is not going to change. If fish aren't adequately harvested, there's a method of capitalism that seems to work real well in the fishing business. If there's only 100,000 fish and expect 100 boats to come back and get 1,000 fish apiece, if all 99 guys don't show up, I guarantee you I'll go in and take care of those 100,000 fish myself. It seems the capitalist forces in our commercial fishing community seem to make sure that at least one person shows up to catch all the fish. And once that guy starts taking his loads back to town, the second person, the third person show up till eventually there's no fish to be caught by anybody. That just seems to be how it works. I doubt there's going to be big, huge reams of fish and big, huge bays full of fish that nobody ever goes and catches. Thank you for the time to testify.
Questions?
Don't run off, Bob.
Questions?
You're so comfortable there, I'm going to ask you.
Representative Harris.
You look nervous this morning. What's the matter?
Not nervous.
I'm nervous.
Bob, it's an important piece of legislation.
He didn't get nervous.
He was nervous in my office yesterday. I want to ask you this question that the local hatchery in my area seems to have some concern about, and this is how they're going to get their how the hatcheries get their revenue now, and if this piece of legislation passes, how they would have some certainty they were going to get their cost recovery money or their money to operate their hatcheries in the future.
Sure. There's two ways the hatcheries get the revenue. Generally, most districts have some type of overriding enhancement tax. I believe is it 2% Prince William Sound for Valdez? Only the main regional collects that enhancement tax. So DALPAC, for example, Gunnett Creek, Armstrong, Keita, Valdez, VFDA, they would not collect an enhancement tax. In Southeast Alaska, the 3% is paid, and only INSRA and SARA get the money, just the major regionals. So there's 3% levied against the fleet. It's about an average of probably 700,000 to 1.2 million is collected by INSRA, and probably 350,000, 400,000 to about 800,000 is collected by SARA in Southeast. So that's one major revenue source. Second major revenue.
Does that automatically go back to them, or is that?
That goes to
appropriation, or what is it?
It's my understanding, through the chair, it's my understanding that the initial year was a lag in the mechanism. It took 9 months to 12 months for the money to first come back. So your first $1 million check didn't come back for 9 to 12 months later. That I think some of the hatchery operators are looking at a potential problem with this funding, because it will mirror that, the same kind of collection, and it'll be 9 or 12 months later that the funds will come back. So in the case of Hidden Falls, for example, the one we're specifically looking at, $625,000 is what their target is for cost recovery this year. So they, if this system were in place right now, they would get a 9 to 12 month delay in collecting that $625,000. So if they were to need a 5% or 6% interest rate on that, we'd have to kick in another $35,000 to $40,000 in our assessment for the first year to get them to that time lag on their money. And I think that's the only fair way that any kind of hatchery is going to be able to negotiate this, is they're going to need some interest on their money. Now, 5 or 6% might sound kind of high compared to what we're getting in our bank accounts, but you know, we're willing to pay whatever the hatchery is going to make them comfortable. But that's going to be a big time lag. The other difference in cost recovery at that particular hatchery right now, the buyer of those fish, NPPI, or the parent company, Marabini, they'll buy that $625,000 for the fish, and within 30 days, they'll remit the check. So basically, you know, that's the difference. The cost recovery, you get paid by most operators right up front, unless an operator goes bankrupt or something, and then you don't get paid at all.
Do you understand their concern? I mean, their concern is that this language says it's appropriate, and that they'd have to come back to the legislature every year. They'd be worried about whether they have to come back to the legislature every year for political reasons. They wouldn't get their money. Is that
legitimate? Well, we subjected ourselves to that 3% for the last 20 years. I mean, we subjected ourselves to having $1 million for NSRA or $700,000 roll into the legislature and roll back out. I guess my answer to that would be, if I was on a hatchery board that was recommending this, and I am on a hatchery board, I serve on the DIPAC board. If I was on a hatchery board that was recommending this, I would make sure that system was going to be okay for me. I mean, I would have to take the faith that system was going to work for me. In Southeast, it's worked, and I believe in other parts of the state that have hatchery assessments, it's worked the same way, where the state receives the money and then sends it back to the hatcheries.
Representative Wilson?
I guess I don't understand the process that takes place right now. Is that part of our budget deliberations in, like, when we have, so that's actually in the budget deliberations, and we And has it been, if it is, has it been paid every time, or has it ever been adjusted by legislators? Because
I think probably if Mr. Reifenstuhl or Mr. Squire are still online from Sitka, they are the recipients of the tax. So if there's been any problems with the tax, I think they would know. Are they still online?
Yeah, I'm still here. The way, maybe just so that, you know, I've been around a while, so I kind of know what the history of starting this whole thing was. In the beginning, all the regional aquaculture associations in the state gave information to the legislature of what it would take to get this program started. It was actually forward funded by appropriation, I believe, by the legislature, because right now, and that was to get the program started. Then from that point on, what we get in any given year is based on the previous year's collections. So there is no delay. There never was a delay in us getting our money when we needed it to start operations on the 1st of July. So, you know, if we were to start this program just the same way that the 3% enhancement program was started way back when, there should be an appropriation equal to what the projected cost of operating would be for next year. There was only one time that I can remember where the total amount of money was different from what was actually collected. That was pointed out to the state authorities, and the legislature took care of that immediately, and the money did come back. So in the 20-some years I've been involved with this, as far as I know, all the money that was ever collected was appropriated back.
Thank you, Pete. Any other questions?
Chairman, can you have somebody from the department come back up to when before we run off?
Christian Game?
Yeah.
Mackay?
So Commissioner, there, well, I don't know if you know, he's kind of new back to the, but.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
I really want to talk to revenue, because I think this is just boilerplate language here, but I want to.
Now you're under fire.
I wish to talk to you, Commissioner. Acting Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman. Hi, Campbell. Commissioner Fish and Game. I'm happy to talk to you and try to answer questions, but I will say the people who know far more about it are here. So.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'm the one that asked you back here. I don't know if you're the right person to talk to or not, Mackay, but I want to, Mr. Commissioner. But I'm trying to find out, because my hatchery in the district, my district, is concerned about this language here that says the legislature may appropriate the funds. I know this is language that's in other parts of the budget and different things, and of course it's a permissive thing based upon whether there's availability of funds. But my question is to you, do you know over the years, and I could do the research and do well if I have to, but can you tell me, is this the type of language that's gone into any legislative funding for hatcheries through programs authorized by the legislature in the past?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I do not know. I will find that out and be back to you this morning on that.
Okay. I mean, I know that the concern, Mr. Chairman, that the concern is that this has to come through a legislative appropriation every year, that would be a political fight. I don't think that's the case. I'm just trying to do my due diligence here.
I do appreciate that concern. We will find out and let you know.
I've had the operating budget a couple times myself. I don't remember that this argument ever took place, and I think it's an automatic thing that goes through the budget process, but
we
not withheld.
I believe we would all share the wish to make sure that it doesn't get caught up in that process. I think we can do that.
That's all I have. I'll do my research on it.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time we'll close public testimony and then I'll kind of respond to your question, Speaker Harris, because I asked, DIPAC does not receive any of the 3% enhancement money, so we called revenue as to how, if we could put a bill in there to get enhancement money for DIPAC, and they told me all I had to do was change the law when it comes to the appropriations level to allocate money to DIPAC. Just put it in the pass-through here, so but I didn't have to change. But I never told that to Eric, but we were looking at trying to get some money for the DIPAC, which puts a lot of suspicion and money into our communities. So there is an appropriation process that we don't even see here, but we could have put the language in there so the money doesn't go just to Ensorah and South Sarah.
I have a question. Is that because that DIPAC basically keeps their area right here in the Juneau area and they don't branch out too far?
No, it's a private nonprofit, mom and pa, they call it, different than Northern Regional Aquacultures. Regional one is organized by fishermen. Mom and pa, like the Lad McCauley started this one with a bunch of people with an idea. So they get none of the enhancement money, but they probably put out most of the fish in Northern Lynn Canal and have for the last 10, 12 years. But that was a side issue, but I did look into it, and so I could have popped out money by the intent language by just putting a number in there. So the money does come through the legislative process. We don't even see it.
Okay.
So
it's like a pass-through.
Yeah. So it has been going on for years. Any other discussions? Wishes of the committee? And we will work with you, Pete. We got your notes here. So.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Like to move it from committee?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move it CS for House Bill
218.
I started to say 37. That's not right, is it?
218, yeah.
218. CS for House Bill 218, version Y, with individual recommendations. And with zero physical, I think.
Two of them.
Task fiscal notes. Any objection?
I'm going to object just for the purpose of discussion for just a second.
Okay.
I'm going to let the bill out of committee, but I have some concerns that I want to get answered from my district, and I just want to put it on the record that I'm going to do the research on this and do it in resources and find out. I don't think their concerns are totally validated, but I want to make sure. So.
Right. I told Ian to check here.
That I'll remove my objection.
No objections. Move the bill. The bill will be moved from committee with individual recommendations. We're adjourned.